From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It's another Thursday evening and the Dice Men Cometh are back for episode 123 on the 30th of June. But before we talk about tabletop gaming, I just want to talk about the thing that everybody is talking about.
The election.
No. The referendum.
Oh, on gay marriage?
No. The Brexit referendum.
Oh.
And in particular...
Didn't that happen on the other side of the world? Why do I care?
Because, Garth, the pound is plummeting.
Ooh.
The English economy is in the toilet. The Prime Minister has resigned.
And this means cheap board games.
Well, we can only hope, although I don't know that a lot of board games are produced in the UK.
True. No, but the book suppositories... Book depository is a good place to buy them.
Look, the thing that jumped out to me about Brexit... And this, for me, was a classic fact. The most Googled thing on the day after Brexit in the UK was, what is the EU?
Wow.
Now, surely you need to ask that question before you cast your vote. And it led me to think a few different things. But look, I just want to share to you, I understand now why the British like tea so much.
Go on.
Because tea leaves.
Are you just going to read out a bunch of Brexit jokes from Facebook? Is that what you're going to do?
No, I'm not. I'm finished now.
Excellent. That's good that you're finished.
Let's talk about what's coming up on our show tonight.
Yes, on this weekly podcast / radio show about board games and card games, Mark is going to replay the invasion of Gaul by the Romans. But is he Asterix, Obelix or Cacophonix?
No, he's Vital Statistics.
Is he? I don't want to carry him around on a shield. Look at the size of him. We have the latest board gaming news, including a hot tip on why gamers are going to be heading to the theatre very soon. Plus, stories from our travels. Garth has managed to make it here from an escape room, which he escaped. And I've been in Bali, where I managed to track down a real-life traditional folk game. All that and more coming up on The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
UK. That was Billy Bragg with, what was his song? Take Down the Union Jack, from Mark's repertoire of 5 artists, 10 songs on The Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3. Now,
Garth,
Mark...
Garth. You've got to... That was relevant.
Yes.
That was relevant. And this is one of the things why I wanted to bring up Brexit. You know, the discussion we're having now is, well, let's do the Texit. Let Tasmania do the Texit from Australia.
Well, didn't you hear that Western Australia wanted to leave and be Westeros? So anyway...
Do the Waxit.
Look, let's talk about games, please.
Well, if you'll permit me, I can actually... I have a really good segue.
Okay.
Because don't you feel like, you know, with Brexit, that we're in the forces of history right now? I mean, we've just had a history-making moment on the global stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sort of event that future generations might want to make a board game from.
Ooh.
A lot like the invasion of another country, which is what... Mark has been simulating with the latest in GMT Games coin series, Falling Skies, which you've been playing lately.
Thank you for that segue, Trent.
Oh, shucks.
So, look, I want to take us back a few years, though. Before we... Well, can you go any further back than 54 BC? I guess you can't in this, but let's go back a few years in game terms. Volko and Andrew Runke made this game, Falling Sky. Now, it harkens back to the very first card-driven war games. Now, one we haven't played, gents, but we must one day. Mark Herman was the founder of these card-driven war games with GMT, with We the People, which was a US independence game in 1994. After him came Ananda Gupta and Jason Matthews with that epic... We talked about it so many times. We love it so much. Twilight Struggle.
The app is out.
Is it ever?
Yep, we'll talk about that more soon.
All right. And then following that, Ed Beach with his Wars of the Reformation, Martin Luther, Here I Stand in 2006, and of course his follow-up, Virgin Queens.
And you might be thinking, oh, isn't this a great chance to bring history to...
Yes, that's right.
But no, it is. It is. It really does bring the history to life in an immersive way that no other medium can do.
And Volko Runka and his co-designers, and there have been a number of them that have worked with him on these coin games, have taken this to a new level since 2012 when the first of them came out. Now, first of all, coin, counterinsurgency. Trent,
hello.
What is it?
What is counterinsurgency?
Correct. Or more importantly, to understand counterinsurgency, surely we first must understand insurgency.
You've sprung this on me. Are we talking about civil wars?
I've got a definition from the Cambridge English Dictionary.
Oh, good.
It's an occasion when a group of people attempt to take control of their country
right.
by force. And, of course, counterinsurgency is therefore the actions taken by the group who are currently in control of the country to prevent its takeover by insurgents. So counterinsurgency is effectively what the government or the ruling party, the ruling group is doing to stop other people from taking control of the country.
So the coin series is looking at these particular theatres.
Absolutely.
Throughout history.
Yeah, and so this, so Falling Sky is number 6 out of 8 in GMT's coin series about counterinsurgency and guerrilla warfare. The first one, Andean Abyss, is about in Colombia with drug cartels and the Colombian government and insurgents operating there. The second one is Cuba Libre, which is dealing with Fidel Castro Cuban insurgents in the late 50s. The third one is A Distant Plain, which is focused on modern Afghanistan. So you've got the Taliban, you've got warlords, you've got the West, obviously the coalition of the willing, the forces there. Number 4, Fire in the Lake, is, of course, the classic about Vietnam.
Which made my head explode.
Yes, and we'll talk a bit about that later. Number 5 is Liberty or Death, the American Rebellion. And I really like this because this is a twist, and maybe America wouldn't like it, but it's like the Americans were the insurgents, were the terrorists, if you like, fighting against the establishment.
There, I'd like to say that the comments of Mark are not necessarily representative of the entire Dice Men group. Thank you, CIA.
Anyway,
funny thing, because Volko, who designed this game, is a CIA national security analyst.
I know. He's probably listening and taping all this and it's going on our permanent records.
Yes.
Anyway, so number 6, of course, Falling Sky. Number 7, Colonial Twilight, which is the French-Algerian War in the 50s and 60s. And number 8 to be released later this year, and I am super excited, Pendragon, The Fall of Roman Britain, or Arthur and Merlin in real life. It's actually based on the fall of Rome and how they basically pulled out of England. So it was what was really happening in England, which then led to, in later years, the Arthurian legends.
So is it a case with the coin games where if you've played one, you've basically played them all? It's more or less the same rule set applied to different geographical areas and
Trent,
periods of history, yeah?
I am so glad you asked that.
It's almost as if I knew you needed me to ask
Let me tell you about the coin games. So in the coin games, all of them have 4 different factions, 4 player groups, and... Although one of the interesting things about Falling Skies, it actually has 5.
One of the what things, Mark?
One of the fascinating things about Falling Skies is it has 5, the Germanic tribes, which are able to be manipulated by one of the other players. But all of these games play 4 people, but they all play 1-4. And Volko and his co-designers have created an amazing complex web of flowcharts where you can play these games with less than 4 players and there is AI to play the other parts. But, of course, you can always do the, I think I'll do this. Okay, I think I'll do this.
Well, I think that's called the Rickards variation,
the multiple personalities.
The Rickards Friday night, isn't it?
But, look, one of the beautiful things about these games is that they are somewhat asymmetrical. It's not like you're working to two completely different things or four completely different things. They're somewhat asymmetrical. So usually you've got one larger power, which is the government or the force that's in control, and then you've got three other sides that are all trying to do their own thing. And the beauty of these games is that balancing factor, because you can't just go for your victory condition, because that could help someone else get to theirs. You've really got to be watching all the factions, and sometimes you've even got to act against your own interests to stop someone winning.
So yeah. What are the four factions in Falling Skies?
I'm going to get to that, Trent.
Well, yeah, because I was really concerned about this because I had never played a coin game. So to go into my very first one with three other players who had all been experienced in coin game series, and I want to say thank you very much to Tim and to Adam particularly who were kind enough to walk us through this 5 or 6 hour epic game. But what I really liked is the fact that all four factions had very, very different win conditions. So you were never all just trying to do the same thing but with different coloured meeples. You all really had very different paths to victory.
Yeah, and in all these games, you do have loose alliances between factions that you might follow if you follow history. But as you said, Garth, there are plenty of times when you need to act against that, because someone might be having a run over. Look, let's get to that in a minute. I just want to mention, so one of the different things about these games is that Volko and his son, Andrew, they're the co-designers. And I initially thought they must have been brothers, but no, it's Volko's son, Andrew.
I bet that's a fun household.
Well, look, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Andrew had just read a translation of Caesar's commentaries, and he was redesigning, to his liking, a setup for the River Sabbath battle from Command and Colours Ancients, Rome versus the Barbarians.
As you do. This is a house I'd love to go around for a dinner
party.
Yeah,
that's right. That then started a conversation about the conflict,
sure,
about how it worked, which had them go, hang on, maybe we could apply this to a coin battle.
This is the oil American family, isn't
Absolutely.
It? It's just like family ties.
Right, now let's get back to Falling Sky. And Garth, I was hinting to you about this before. I think I've discovered the origin of the name, because it doesn't speak about it anywhere in the literature.
Is it from Henny Penny, The Sky is Falling?
No.
Is it from the short-lived science fiction show?
No. But there is a famous quote from none other than Chief Vital Statistics that says, "The sky may fall on your head tomorrow, but tomorrow never comes."
Hang on. Was Vital Statistics from the Asterix and Obelix stories?
Exactly.
Was he actually an historical figure?
No, he's not.
It's just they've just lifted it from
exactly,
the comic book.
Exactly, because this is
according to Mark's half-assed
this is
research.
My assertion, I tell you what, but there's nothing else
You've
anywhere that
made
says anything
it
about
up.
It.
You've made this up.
I assert.
You've assumed.
I assert. This game is...
Quick, while he's talking, get on Google.
I'm Googling as we
speak. This
game
is Asterix and Obelix versus Caesar for real, okay? So let me paint you a picture. It's late summer, 54 BC. In a series of brilliant and brutal campaigns, Caesar has seized Gaul for Rome, but not all tribes rest subdued. In the north, the Belgic leader, Ambiorix, springs a trap on unwary legions while Caesar is away. In the south, an ambitious son of the Arverni seeks to unite a Celtic confederation in revolt against the hated Romans. But what of the influential Aedui? I can never pronounce that.
Well, because that's me.
It was you, Garth. Their republic appears content to shelter under Roman protection. But can they be trusted any more than other Gauls? Meanwhile, along the Rhine, Germanic warbands will multiply. So, as we said, this is the game where basically there are four factions, the Romans, and three Gaulic factions are playing. And as I mentioned, the Germanic warbands are a fifth faction not controlled by a player, but, and I'll get to it in a moment, a player can sort of take control of them. So in this game and in all the coin games, each player has a set of actions they can do. Two types of actions. You've got commands and you've got special abilities. Now, the commands, everyone has very, very similar things they can do. There's stuff like, and I'm not going to use the proper terms, but you can move, you can fight, you can get more troops, and you can get more resources. But then each faction has special actions that are specific to that faction, and this is one of the beauties of that game. So, for example, in this one, Romans can build forts. Arverni can devastate a region, which is sort of like taking a scorched earth policy. Mm-hmm. Aedui can trade because they're friends with the Romans and they get stuff from the Romans and trade to get more money. Mm-hmm. And the Belgic can enlist help from their German kinsmen. Now, how a turn works in this, you flip over a card. On the top of the card, you've got an order of play. So you have the four faction symbols. And the card will tell you, Gus looking very proud of himself here, and I'm a bit concerned. The card will tell you the player order of the four factions. The bottom half of the card is an event. So much like many of these other card-driven war games, the event generally is in two parts. So there'll be like a good part and a bad part for one particular faction. So what you then do in player order, the first ordered faction will make a choice. You can do a command without a special ability, you can do a command and a special ability, or you can do the event. Now, based on which of those three things you choose, the second faction has a choice. If the first person does the command only, then the second person can only do a limited command, which is a command in only one area.
Yeah, and you follow it down the flowchart. Yeah. This is all sounding very familiar from the other coin game.
Exactly, from Fire in the Lake that we played, and I'll talk a bit more about in a minute. If you do the command and the special ability, then the second person can do the event off the card. Or if the first person wants to do the event, the second person can do a whole bunch of stuff. Only two factions get to act each turn, though.
And that's what I really, really, really liked. Because as a new player to this, it was really quite a challenge to figure out when I wanted to take my turn.
Yes.
Because there are very few games where passing your turn is such a legitimate strategy.
Yes, and and one of the things that does make it really different is that you can see two cards at once. So you can see the card you're playing now and then the next card. So you can see the order of the factions in the next turn. And, of course, if you know you're going to get to go first in the next turn, you may then choose to pass. So basically this goes on and on and on in this game until you get a winter card. And a winter card is like an end-of-the-round reset where you go through a whole bunch of different actions, and I won't go into them, but one of them is to check for victory. So you can only actually win when a winter card comes out. In Fire in the Lake, it was a coup card. In Andean Abyss and Cuba Libre and other games, it's a propaganda card. So there are these cards which are sort of like mini resets and divide the games into sections. In these, one of the things is everyone sort of has to go back where they're safe for the winter, and it's rinse and repeat, basically.
Yeah, this is where the first winter card was a bit of a soul destroyer, because I think I was maybe one thing away from winning, and bear in mind that we'd already been playing for several hours before this first winter card. Now, we were playing, it must be said, the short game, which only had three winters.
Yes.
Now, we started, according to the notes I made, at around about 7:30 and finished around about 12:30 at night. So we were already playing for a long, 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 long time. The normal game has five winters in it.
Oh, my God.
So,
but you're not learning it every game, obviously.
No, however.
And none of us, a fair enough point, I think, is although Tim and Adam had both played coin games, as had I played one, sort of not knowing what I was going, it was the first time that any of us had played this actual game.
Yeah, and what I found amazing is how much of a reset button this winter was. Because I look at Tim, and Tim, he took control of the Romans. So he had this massive army who was trying to go through Gaul and take over province after province. He didn't have supply lines in place when winter happened, which essentially made almost all his troops and his forts and any other cubes that he had on the board just disappear and die because he couldn't afford to feed them over winter. And that I mean, I was very happy because I was his opponent, but that was a really tough reset for that player. Mm. It was brutal.
You know what I find with these coin games? They're kind of like a big bowl of bran. You know what I mean?
No.
You know, it's the idea of it sounds good. You know it's going to be good for you in some way, but it really needs dressing up with a banana and a bit of honey.
No, I disagree because that's what the other players bring. A couple of drinks bring to it as well.
Oh,
with the right group of people, these games of the one that I've played, and it must be said, Mark, I won.
Yeah, shut up, Garth.
This game was awesome. I'm very glad we got it out of the way on the first night of BorderCon because I didn't want to have to... We contemplated pausing and coming back the next morning.
That's what I mean, though. You're glad you get it out of the way.
But it was an awesome experience. Yeah. And Mark, you go.
I was going to say, look, I just wanted to draw on a couple of more of the absorbing differences between this and some of the other coin games. So this one has a smaller map, as does Cuba Libre. Now, before this one came out, the common thought was Cuba Libre should be the first coin game you play. Now, Trent, you'd be interested to know that Fire in the Lake is the one they recommend you should never, ever start with as your first coin experience.
Really?
Which is, of course, the one that we started with.
Yeah, well, that's the history that's familiar to us.
Yeah, that's right. Look, this one has different command and control structures with leaders that the other ones don't have because there's no radios in this game, of course. You can't call ahead and say, hey, go and do this. It's all around, you know, what's happening with the leader at the time. There's no terrorism in this one, or there is the devastation. It has been said that the four factions in this one are perhaps the most balanced of any coin game because the Romans aren't superly overpowered because they are a long way stretched from home. You can brew the potions to make you super strong like Asterix.
What?
No, I'm just joking. But wouldn't that be an amazing expansion? And look, I love this game. Fire in the Lake blew my head off a bit, and I went away sort of with my tail between my legs thinking, I really don't know what happened there. Whereas this one, I loved it. I still didn't know what happened, but I want to play it again, and it's made me want to play more of these games.
All right, most importantly, did Mark make up that quote from Vital Statistics?
I'm pretty sure he did because there is an ancient Roman playwright who is Publius Terentius, who is otherwise known as Terence, who wrote a play, which is one of the famous lines is Fiat Justita Ruat Calum, which is essentially something that is let justice be done, though the heavens fall, which is otherwise known as the falling sky clause, which is essentially Caesar being able to take what he wants, regardless of the consequences.
Well, Caesar certainly did a lot of seizing. And on that.
Oh, that was Chris Isaac with Blue Spanish Sky. You're with the Dice Men. Wake up, cometh Trent on Edge Radio 99.3. Of course, that tied in with Falling Sky, Blue Spanish Sky. Now, to complete the trilogy, you're going to talk about Origins, Trent.
As part of Board Game News on the Dice Men cometh, the Twilight Struggle app has been released.
Woo-hoo!
Yep.
Yes.
Playdeck released it on the 24th of June. It's for iPad only, and I think at this point it's only available in America.
No, it's not.
Really?
No.
I look for it today.
You may look at these things on your telephone machine, but that does not bring up iPad apps. I was looking on my iPad only a few days ago, and you can get it in Australia on the App Store.
Anyway, it's been on Steam for a while, so get into it if you've never played it. And it's not part of the coin series, is it?
No, it's sort of one of the precursors, I guess, as I discussed when talking about it.
The Origins Game Fair for 2016 is done and dusted in Columbus, Ohio, from June 15 to 19. with attendance of 15,480 nerds.
Yeah.
Slightly down, actually, after a couple of years of spectacular growth for this particular event. And those numbers, I mean, it really does show you just how big these cons, and not just in gaming circles, but things like San Diego Comic-Con. And I mean, these are authentic events where everybody comes together, and they really are just such a massive growth area for geekdom.
Definitely. Now, is that unique numbers, or is that
that's
repeat people?
That's yeah, unique numbers.
That's still a big number.
And the other big number is the number of games that were on display. 8 million.
Wow.
And I'm not going to talk about a single bloody one of them because I just can't be bothered.
Now, wow.
Look, so this is one of the things I struggle about with the when I do the board game news. To me, the board game news is more than just a list of new releases, isn't it?
It is.
Because you can get that information anywhere.
It is, and
mm-hmm.
there is a whole bunch of new great games that were released, talked about, teased.
No, name one.
At Origins.
Name one. Was there anything interesting?
Oh, look, have you ever heard of a game about barroom brawls that was interesting? The Dragon and Flagon, where you're in the D&D type dragon, and all of a sudden the discussion gets a bit heated.
No, you had a game called Red Dragon Inn. Wasn't that bar brawls?
No, that was drinking games.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought one
tomato,
of the,
tomato.
I
yeah.
thought one of the intriguing games that was coming out and announced was Wasteland Express Delivery Service, or some combination of those words, by John Gilmore, which is basically Mad Max the movie or Firefly in the style of Mad Max. Pick up and deliver, avoid the bad guys.
To me, another engrossing one was called Fog of War. Now, funnily enough, it was actually produced by the same people who, or created by the same people who did the Flagon and Dragon, and that's the Engelstein family. Jeff and his kids, they did the Space Cadets. And this
another
one is
family that just has non-stop yucks at home.
They and the Runcos, they would make an epic version of, what's that family? Family Feud, that thing. Yeah, they would just go forever.
Yes. And then, I'm going to just say one more that yeah. some would say is engrossing, but I would not say that, is Dark Souls. Now, this was a massive, massive Kickstarter success, but I looked at the little Dice Tower couple of minute preview on it, and I just, it was like listening to that Chris Isaac song all over again. I was just really, really sleepy.
Of course, the Origins Awards were also presented. It's been a big year for the Star Wars franchise, with Imperial Assault, Armada, and the Force and Destiny RPG all taking out awards. Of course, the Game of the Year has gone to Vlada Hafatl's Codenames.
Ah.
Deserved? Game of the Year?
Yeah.
Well, look, we talked about this briefly when we talked about the spiel a little while ago, because it's just so popular already. I don't know whether these people are giving it awards purely because it's a commercial success. It's a good, fun game. I really, really, really enjoy it. But I don't know whether it's challenging and systematic enough to make it more fun.
Is it a game where there's actually almost nothing to it? It's so paper thin. Or is it a case of it being so brilliantly simplistic that anybody can play it?
It's very, very impressive in that you can get it to the table, you can teach it, and people can be playing it in no time
yes.
flat. I find that attractive. I find it compelling. I find it completely, absolutely beautiful.
I think that is the thought-provoking aspect of it is that anyone can play it. And, you know, it could be a secret hidden trapdoor into our hobby where they don't actually realise they're playing a game.
And just in time, Codenames Pictures has been announced, which crosses Dixit, or Mysterium, if you like, with Codenames, where the agents are represented by pictures instead of words. In other news, Mayfair Games has acquired Twilight Creations, publishers of the Zombies! Series of games. I would like to think that Mayfair has done this purely to stop the makers of the Zombies! From ever making another one of those games ever again. Because they're shit.
Language warning.
But I'm probably wrong. In other industry news, Indie Board and Card Games has merged with Action Phase Games, whose label will now effectively disappear entirely into the Indie Board and Card Games brand. This is the group that gave us Coup,
and
Flashpoint,
25 other versions of Coup.
And Action Phase previously gave us... Okay, moving on. who likes turtles of the adolescent martial arts mutant type?
Oh, I do. I used to.
As do lots of 40-plus white men who like to illegally download films, which is perhaps why Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows stiffed utterly at the US box office recently. That's right, people stayed away in droves. Who cares about this film? I'll tell you. WizKids Publishing, because they are about to release brand new bits for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles HeroClix game in March 2017, or will they? I don't know, because WizKids owner, Joel Weinschenker...
Keep going.
...has run into some financial difficulties with three other companies he owns, aside from WizKids. He also controls Hastings Entertainment, a geek retailer of comics and books and games, Movie Stop, a DVD store, and SP Images, which is a sports merchandising company. Now, these three companies have filed for bankruptcy. They are on the market to be sold. Now, I don't think that I don't think he's hard up for a dollar, because he actually also owns the rights to Elvis Presley's Graceland's operations.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, maybe can you combine Elvis with the Turtles somehow? Maybe there's a way out of his financial difficulties with that.
Yeah.
But he's going to be looking for hits, is what I'm saying, with WizKids and maybe the Turtles. It's time they just put a fork in that. Popular beat-em-up dice game King of Tokyo is getting a facelift, and this was on display at Origins, the Origins Game Fair. New art for King of Tokyo, supposedly taken from the upcoming digital version of the game. There's two new monsters. Well, they're not new. They were previously included in tournament packs or something.
Okay.
The Space Penguin and the Cyber Kitty now become standard parts of the King of Tokyo game. The rules are basically the same, and older versions of the game are still compatible with this update, except that the new game will have new card backs, so you can't mix up the cards unless you use sleeves. So it's just as well that Aiello Games are planning to release some sleeves. Isn't it?
What a coincidence.
By happy coinkydink.
Yeah, wow.
So King of Tokyo 2.0, as I'm calling it, is also getting a release into American Target stores, which is huge, because it goes to the mass market, basically. And that's a perfect game for the mass market. And there's an exclusive character in that set as well, the Baby Gigazor.
Oh, okay.
Which is not available in the other sets. As anally retentive older men with the collecting gene, gentlemen, I think we can all admit to that. Does the existence of these new editions compel you to buy them? Does it render your old copy of King of Tokyo a dud?
Absolutely not, because it is the same game.
Yeah.
And the characters add no unique abilities.
Yeah, well, they might add a little bit, but it's not one of those games where you need to catch them all, not wanting to break any copyrights, to bring a different experience to the gaming table.
Another reason I don't feel compelled to is because Leon has very often said that King of Tokyo, for what it is arguably a perfect game, which means that he will get the new version.
Just to confuse the issue, in September there's also going to be a new expansion for King of New York, the sequel to King of Tokyo.
Is it King of New Jersey?
It's got an electric shark in it.
Hey!
I can only imagine he gets laser beams on his head. How much time have I got?
You've got all the time you want.
Oh, really? Okay. IDW Games, publishers of Machikoro, the X-Files game, Yidu, the latest version of Tammany Hall as well, and more. IDW Games is part of the larger IDW Media Holdings. They have just raised $4 million from their shareholders to fund a television production arm, which is going to be dedicated to IDW's properties. Now, that includes some things like Winterworld, V-Wars, which is like Vampire Wars, and Dirk Gently from Douglas Adams.
Yes.
They have the rights to that.
Yeah.
And a whole host of great comic book titles like Chew, And IDW continues to be a company to watch as they try to turn themselves into a sort of multi-tentacled geek media monster with integrated products across all their lines.
Yeah.
So they'll be selling the game and the comic book to the TV show. And it's a great strategy, one that certainly works for Marvel. Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle, a deck-wielding game.
Okay, and again.
Okay.
That's all I need to say about that one. Monty Cook's Numenera RPG is getting a big push with a range of new products, including a starter set for RPG noobs and possibly a film in the works.
Wow.
Days of Wonder is going back to the cash cow that is Ticket to Ride, the world's most famous train game, and they're adding boats. Rails and Sails, it's called, as players put boats on trains or trains on boats, I don't know. And it's going to be the largest game board for any Ticket to Ride game ever. And finally, in the board gaming news, brace yourself, Monopoly the Musical.
What?
This is the first in a partnership between Hasbro and Broadway production company, the Araka Group. And it's a deal that they've formed between these two companies to create stage fare that can be used not only in full-scale theatrical productions, but also in things like theme parks, high schools.
Monopoly on Ice.
Exactly. The Araka Group is behind successful musicals like Wicked, The Book of Mormon, Matilda. Hasbro aren't mucking around with kid stuff.
That's big stuff.
Yeah, it is. And let's remember that Hasbro also owns Wizards of the Coast and thereby Magic the Gathering.
Oh,
the musical.
Oh, what?
No, I'm just making that up.
Oh, my God.
But Monopoly the Musical is a real thing, and that's in addition to the two separate Monopoly movies that are currently in development, which just begs the question, what are the key moments in a Monopoly dramatic arc? I mean, what is the story about? A real estate tycoon who starts off on the Old Kent Road and...
It's the release from jail, obviously.
Works his way up to Mayfair, goes to jail for some gambling.
But surely... The end of the second arc is when he comes second in that beauty contest.
That is all the news that is fit to print and discuss. When we come back, we're going to talk about the travels of two fine gentlemen. I can get to... Oh, I love that track. One of my favourite Men at Work tracks. That one was, of course, Colin Hay solo... With Overkill.
Have you played anything on the show this week from this century? Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. You're with the Diceman Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark, Trent and Garth now. While I've been firmly anchored in my seat here in Hobart, you two gentlemen have been travelling the world.
We have, but before we get to that, I just wanted to make a quick mention of our survey... Because we have been getting so many responses. So thank you to everyone who has spent the time to do our survey. Now, we are about to wrap this up. When you listen to this podcast, we will only have the survey open for one more week. So the survey is about the direction of the show, what you like, what you don't like, how much Mark smells, a few other bits and pieces like that.
We're thinking about making a change or two and, you know, we want your help. And if you don't like something about the show, that's actually really... more useful for
and
us.
We've had a lot of, I must say, a lot of refreshing, stimulating and absorbing feedback, which we've been fascinated by. We'd love to get some more.
Definitely. So, look, I just want to say that if you would please do us the favour, if you listen to the show and you want to help shape the direction of it for days and weeks and months to come, jump onto the Facebook page. It is the pinned post on our page. Although apparently pinned posts don't show on your phone, so you might have to scroll down a little bit.
No, it shows on mine.
Anyway, please do our survey. It's only going to be up for one more week. Now, Trent, you have just come back from an international holiday.
Well, speaking of the face space, you might have seen my picture on there of two likely lads from Bali, from Tanalot in Bali. I was
Geez, one of them had a big snake.
And it was the funniest thing because... So they're touts standing there with a snake. Tourists can get photos taken with the snake, but there were no tourists around. So they were playing this game on the street with chess pieces, and I stopped and watched that. And I said, look, I'd really like a photo. I don't care about the snake, right? Can I just get a photo of the game? And they were like, yeah, I don't know, sure. And they actually took the time to teach me this little Javanese game. They were, and at the end, I'm like, well, what is this called? And it's like, no, it's just got no name. It's a traditional Javanese game normally played with rocks.
Yep.
In this case, chess pieces. Three black, three white. And it's basically noughts and crosses. You just got to try and get three in a row. Now, the difference is that as you put your pieces down, once you've deployed all three onto your nine-space grid, you can then start moving them around.
Ah, and mobile tic-tac-toe.
And the pieces can get trapped in the corners if they're surrounded by the opponent's three three rocks, because you can move orthogonally or diagonally. This rapidly sort of devolves into stalemate,
yes,
as you can imagine. I mean, it's not a particularly complex game, but what it does become, I mean, it's very, these guys are playing it really fast, okay? No mercy.
Yeah.
And it becomes a game of concentration.
Okay.
Right, and that's actually the gist of it. And they're playing for money. Right, and they were trying to get as much out of me as they possibly could. I managed to take out one game of the four that I played with them, and that was against the guy with the snake, who I think was slightly distracted. Maybe the other guy was a gun, but look, it was just a great little experience and a nice little chance to actually connect with people overseas, which, you know, doesn't always happen when you're a big dumb white guy wandering through the developing world.
And in Tanalot, do they eat ham and jam and span a lot?
Garth, you've been travelling.
Yes, I have been. So unlike your trip to Bali, I managed to go to Melbourne.
Oh,
for that about far.
The 100 bajillionth time this month, and I'll be on a plane to Sydney again on Saturday. But anyway, what I did get to do, and I was actually doing it about a week ago, because after last week's show, I was on a plane the next morning to Melbourne, I went to go and do an escape room. Now, an escape room is something that we had talked about behind the scenes in doing before BorderCon, if time permitting, or possibly sometime in the future. But I was very lucky that my boss was deciding to put something on for us, and someone else paid for me, so I was very happy about
that. You did this as a team-building exercise,
right? Yeah, team-building, I guess that's what you want to call it in today's office speak. But the point is, I didn't have to pay.
Hey!
So I went to an escape room called Exitus, which sounds to me more like a euthanasia program than an exit room.
Or like one of Mark's puns.
Yes, indeed.
Maybe now, it was pronounced Exitus.
No, Exitus. So anyway, this was in Melbourne, in the QV or the QV centre. Anyway, it was next to a bowling alley. But there were three possible rooms that you could go into. You could go into a room called the casino and you could do your Ocean's 11 style heist. Or you could do the garden, which sounds really scary. Or you could do Butcher's Barrow, which is what I did.
Yeah.
Now, the way this worked is we're divided up into teams of somewhere between 3 and 5. We then have all our electronic devices taken away from us and put in a sealed and locked box so that we cannot do any form of internet checking. We're then blindfolded. So I got to walk behind and in front of people, blindfolded, through essentially a bowling alley into a room, which I thought was, I don't know,
atmospheric,
delightful.
Yeah.
Very atmospheric. But then that's when the fun begins, because essentially you are then spoken to and you have the setup. Now, the setup is essentially, now I am making sure this is spoiler-free so that I'm not ruining it for anyone. I got this setup from the internet site that is readily available. You've been kidnapped and chained up. You can smell the fear in the room. How did this happen? Why did you end up here? There's a severed hand on a plate. You might be next. Now is not the time to be afraid. Now is the time to make your escape. And that's exactly what we plan to do for the next 50 minutes, because you're locked in this room for, 50 minutes, trying to solve the puzzles, figure out the clues, make your way from room to room so that ultimately at the end of this 50 minutes you have escaped. Ultimately, you're going for victory points, which is all determined by how quick you do this thing.
Victory points?
Victory points is determined by how quick you do it. You get points based on the number of minutes you have taken.
So what are you trying to do? Are you scouring the room for a key, or is there a combination?
Look, the first room that we went into was almost pitch black, bar the little emergency light that had to stay on. Because in the setup was, we had been kidnapped by this butcher and we were locked in his garden shed. So it was set up like a garden shed. There were, you know, your normal watering cans and pots and empty tins of paint and things hanging off the wall mixed with blood.
And everything's real. You can pick everything up.
This is all real. You can pick it up. But there was also a series of puzzles that you had to try and do. First of all, there was a whole bunch of belongings in there that we needed to fumble around and find the right pieces to construct something that allowed us to help solving the puzzle. Now, you're also given an iPad, which is basically your, here, if you need a clue, scan a QR code or look at get some information, but that will cost you a time penalty.
Yep.
So it does that, you know, how stupid do you want to feel for how long versus do you want to just get the answer and suffer the 5-minute penalty? Now, we were there with five people. Now, five people who aren't necessarily that stupid. However, we were the absolute poster children for not working cooperatively. We were doing five different things. We had no clear strategy. So we were in the first room for about 20 to 25 minutes trying to solve this puzzle, which is essentially what's the combination to the keypad to get out of the shed and into the butcher's house when we had to do it all again. So we spent our 50 minutes. We managed to get within two clues of solving this escape room. So we didn't succeed. And I must put my hand on my heart and say, I could have tried harder, but I was more interested in watching what the other people were doing because that was just about as much fun as the escape room. But I did really like the puzzle that was involved. Now, I don't want to spoil it because this is one of those things that you can only do once. I really, really had a lot of fun. And I think it would be something really good for the three of us or the four of us or if we had five people to do. But for me, I think the sweet spot in an escape room is going to be about three people because you would able to get some form of strategy.
Oh, God, can you imagine the three of us in an escape
room? Well, no, I'm not including Mark in this. I reckon me, you and Leon Trent do this, and Mark does his own room.
Is it possible to alpha game one of these things?
Yes, definitely.
Oh.
But I think you need to have people who will just do what they're told, and that is clearly not something that's going to happen in this particular room.
No.
My brain quite went straight to, right, Garth, you're going to look through there. Trent, you're going to do this. I'll be doing this. Right, what have you done?
Yeah, so look, the overarching theme in how these work is, look, it's a lot of maths-based puzzles, a lot of combination and code cracking kind of things. There's lots of hidden objects and you've got to think laterally to be able to make it work. So the puzzles themselves, you will only ever be able to do them once. But for a couple of, it was about 2 hours. We had a half an hour set up. We had a little bit of time afterwards. It was good fun.
So how would you describe it in one word, Garth?
I would describe it as prepossessing.
Really?
Mm.
I was thinking more enthralling.
No, it was very riveting. It was stirring. I wouldn't call it captivating, but I did have a lot of fun. And obviously, that is a big part.
So it was pleasurable.
It was.
So in case you're wondering what the hell we're on about here, well, this is your survey results at work because it's been picked up that a few of us are a little bit guilty of using the word interesting a little too often. And quite frankly, I think the word interesting is kind of like damning with faint praise, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're on a mission in the Dice Man Cometh to stamp out our own use of the word.
The problem is, for the last 45 minutes, we have used every possible synonym of that particular word that is available on the internet.
Well, tune in next week to see if we drop the I word on the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio.
Now, just a couple more minutes before we finish up. Of course, we couldn't let the opportunity go by without gloating. We won the Grizzle. Now, I know out there people are saying, so what? We win all the time. Well, we don't, okay? This was a first for us. We have played a lot of games of that game.
Have we ever?
And didn't even get close to winning once. We finally pulled it out. Now, Garth, what do you think was the secret to us winning this particular game?
Well, the initial difference was we had no Trent and no Leon. So that was good. I thought that was really good. But I'm struggling. A week later, I'm still struggling to think what we actually did any different.
We did a lot of short missions.
We did. But
I don't think that is something that is unique to the game that we've played.
Yeah, I don't know.
What we did possibly do is use our speeches a bit more effectively, because every time a speech was given, we were always getting rid of 2 to 3 cards from our hand, which was fantastic in our group of three. I thought we were able to, although we didn't table talk, we were able to guide the support, in the way that we were able to make it effective.
Yes, our support was very effective.
And I think that is certainly something that is a bit more clear in a 3-player game than in a 4, because we didn't have as many rounds where support was divided evenly.
If you ask me, the grizzled... Look, it does its job. It really does tell you that World War One story of the trenches. But it's a bit of a dud game, really. It's random. It's just down to the randomness of the cards.
I can't believe I'm hearing this.
Whether or not you get through. No, it's luck.
Who led him into the studio?
Yeah, I don't know. World War One was luck, man. You didn't know whether you were going to survive going over the trenches, or you didn't know whether a whistle was going to bonk you on the head in the night, like it happens in the Grizzled.
But that's my point. It sells that idea fabulously, and it's worth playing on that alone. Ergo, a great game.
Okay, well, look, we are going to finish up this week just by saying, you know, check us out on Facebook. Keep a close eye on our Instagram page. We've been very hot on the Instagram. And look out for Twitter. Listening to our show, download our podcast. Don't forget our survey. And love us.
Wow, that's very charismatic of you, Mark. That's all a synonym for interesting.
That's all we've got time for this week. We'll talk to you again. And you can hear us again next week. Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.